This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The leading cause of injury by police forces might surprise you. It's not the guns officers carry, but the police dogs that accompany them. According to a report from Pivot Legal Society, police dogs bite or injure an individual in British Columbia every other day. Late this November, new provincial regulations were established to help reduce the incidence of police dog assaults. The regulations will come into effect in September 2015. Here to discuss the provisions of the new regulations is Pivot Legal Society lawyer Doug King. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning.
So tell us, why are police dogs the number one cause of injury by police forces?
We were pretty surprised when we found the statistics and then saw just how prevalent they're used. And I think up to that point, we'd really seen them as a specialty tool and then something that was only kind of put out if needed. And then when we started looking into it a bit more, we realized that police dogs have become an everyday tool for a lot of police forces, especially in Vancouver Police Department. They're often just placed on patrol and out on duty. So that's, I think, probably one of the main reasons why they've had more encounters and more bites as a result.
And what provisions are outlined in the new regulations?
Well, the new regulations create a bit of a playing field for when the police dogs can be brought out and when they can be used against a suspect or a subject. They really are kind of, I guess, based in or founded in common sense for the most part, but they, up to this point, we didn't really have any regulations on police dogs at all. So they create, a standard or basic guidelines for when an officer is allowed to use the dog first and foremost, and hopefully will kind of give more guidance on when it would be inappropriate to use them.
And what about training?
It also, sets out the very standards, I guess, of how police dogs are trained. And we were really happy to see the regulations come in, but we thought there could be more done here in this area. Generally speaking, the police dogs are trained to bite something when they locate it, and that's been the source of a lot of controversy, especially in the States and also in Europe as well. So we see different methods of training actually out there in the world, which is rare for policing to have different methods and different practices. So in our perspective, in British Columbia, we should be looking at what the best practice is to make sure everybody is kept as safe as possible.
Well, yeah, could you just explain a little bit about the difference between the bark and hold versus the bite and hold?
Right. So part of the report that we did and part of the research that we did kind of focused on the fact that in BC we actually have two different types of training and different departments use those different type of training. So, for example, the Saanich Department in Vancouver Island employs the bark and hold method of training, while some of the larger departments, like the Vancouver Police Department and the RCMP, use the bite and hold. And really the main difference is that when a dog is used to track a subject and locate them, how the dog treats that subject when they find it is dependent on their training. And with bark and hold, they're trained to just bark at the subject and wait until the handler arrives. With bite and hold, they're taught to automatically bite that subject and continue to bite until the handler tells them to stop.
So with the new provisions, there's some guidelines around that.
Exactly. So, up to this point, if a dog was in training not following the commands of its handler, if it was having difficulty removing the bite from an individual, if it was not responding to a handler's request to stop basically a track and disengage, it wasn't really a bar for that dog still being in service. There wasn't really any mechanism to prevent them from being used. We saw dogs that were being used, which probably weren't adequately trained to prevent accidental bites, bites that couldn't be stopped, and bites where the dog couldn't be removed. So the basic training standards state that if a dog is not performing these tasks correctly in training, they can't be used in service. Yeah, so. The public.
And the incidents with dogs, where they were recorded?
There's a bunch of statistics when it comes to the use of police dogs. And what we did was we gathered kind of painstakingly each department's different statistics for each handler, for each dog, for the total number for department. It took quite a lot of effort. And one of the additions to the regulations is basically a standard requirement that is done, and that's given to the government so that it's not left up to the civil society to kind of watch and figure these things out. And that's important because there needs to be an accountability mechanism as we move forward with the dogs where, you know, the government can intervene and say, this department's not doing it correctly. This department is doing it correctly, and that needs to be fixed.
So was that, did that contribute to part of the problem of why this has been overlooked for so long?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is culture. And when we look at dog squads, they typically are some of the oldest units in a department. They've been around for decades. They're used heavily for promotional purposes with the public. And they have a bit of insulation from how they operate. It's definitely with Vancouver, we got the impression that the dog squad was pretty sacred and difficult to criticize or to speculate on how they were operating. So when we revealed the statistics, I think we pulled back the veil a little bit on a practice that's been going on and kind of been allowed to go on for a very long time in BC. We still have, you know, some questions about how it relates to the rest of Canada, and we're hoping to do and the same thing that we did in BC and some of the other provinces and really kind of be able to compare and contrast and say which province has the least amount of bites and what kind of training is out there as well.
And can you remind us some of the incidences here in BC that brought this to attention?
Yeah, so one of the things that we tried to do in the report that was mix, you know, the hard statistics and the data around police dogs, which are kind of irrefutable, with the stories of what it actually means to be bitten by a police dog and what it's been like for individuals who've been bitten. So we gathered stories. I've talked to dozens of people who have been bitten by police dogs, and they really range. You know, there's youths who are bitten. There are a significant amount of innocent bystanders or the wrong person who is bitten. And you also have people who are just suspects of a criminal charge at the time who were bitten. And for the most part, the common denominator is that when you're bitten by a police dog, it's a very intense and heavy use of force, and it typically will lead to scarring and potential nerve damage for the rest of your life. And I think we had an attitude by the police forces that if everything goes well, it might not cause that much of an injury. But in a worst-case scenario with a police dog, if the dog doesn't remove its bite, if it bites in the wrong place, it bites the wrong person, it can be absolutely devastating and life-altering consequences.
Are the police accountable in a way, in the sense that are the victims supported somehow?
I really feel like up to this point, the police have not been accountable with how they've used dogs in any sense of the word. When we look at the police reports, when the bad case scenarios happen, when the wrong people are bitten, when people are bitten in the wrong way, all you really read is a justification and kind of an explanation for what happened, but there's never any feeling of remorse or a recognition that something better could be done. So up to this point, I think they've been really free from scrutiny. And one of the great hopes, I guess, is that regulations will start to provide that level of scrutiny that's necessary.
And do you think these new regulations are tough enough, or could they be more rigorous?
They could have been tougher. We had set out a group of recommendations in our report this summer that encompassed a lot of what the regulations did. So, you know, obviously, generally speaking, we were happy when we saw them because they were pretty responsive to some of the concerns that we'd raised. But there were a few areas where we thought it could be much stronger. The area of training, for sure, was a big part of it. You know, in our opinion, if we've identified a best practice in British Columbia, if we know one department is doing better than the others, why would we not follow that example? Why would we not follow their model? Because the citizens of BC, I think, generally expect for their police forces to be using the best methods and the best practices. So that was a big area where we thought there could be more. And we also thought there could be more restrictions on how we look at and view the police dogs. And like I said, you know, are they specialty tools or are they kind of an everyday occurrence? And with the departments that use them so prevalently, I think the regulations miss an opportunity to really say police dogs are not something that you use all the time. They're not something that you put on patrol. They're not something that should be a first responder to an incident. It should be a specialty tool that's only brought out when it's absolutely necessary.
Okay, well, Doug, I want to thank you a lot for taking the time to speak with us and all your hard work around this issue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Pivot Legal Society lawyer Doug King about the new police dog regulations in British Columbia.